You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. On today's episode, I'll talk about the latest rumors regarding Bam Adebayo and, of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I'll conclude my conversation with my former co-host Wes Goldberg, where we talk about Duncan Robinson's growth and what's next for the Miami Heat. But first, a little internal housekeeping, if you will. Obviously, following the demoralizing loss to the Los Angeles Lakers in the NBA Finals, I took a couple days off. Wasn't quite sure what I could add to all the noise going on outside of everything that's happened. Look, it's been an incredible season, very chaotic in many, many ways. For it to have ended the way it did in mid-March with no clear future and no realistic way of restarting this season, it seemed like everything was lost and who knew what was going to happen. But of course, we all know how it turned out. The bubble was a complete and total success. And I think that the Heat's run was probably one of the best stories about the bubble. I can't imagine anything coming close to that. I imagine Lakers fans would disagree, but who really cares about their opinion? As far as the offseason is concerned, look, here we are now. It's been very difficult to perhaps put away our memories of that team. But offseason, you know, it's still an opportunity, and it gives us some time to look ahead to the draft and free agency. We're not quite sure what's going to happen with next season. Some of the dates are going to change. We know there's a draft that's going to take place next month. Free agency starts next month. All that is subject to change, as always, because, well, the world is changing almost every day, and the NBA has to reflect that. But I'll always be available to answer your questions on anything related to the Heat or the NBA. And one of the things I also wanted to talk about during the next couple of weeks is a player-by-player breakdown over the next, you know, couple of weeks, looking at their impact this past season and what's next for them, because I think we grew to really get connected to all these players over the last few weeks and months of the Orlando bubble and over the course of the season. It was an incredibly long season, a year, a calendar year, from media day all the way up to the end of the NBA Finals. And so that was a heck of a opportunity as a fan base to connect with the players in that locker room and on that roster. And while they did go through some changes during the course of the season, I think there's a lot to look forward to as far as the players that are still on the roster and what's going to happen next season. Of course, there are lots of questions regarding free agency, and trade talk is always a possibility. But I haven't really digested the season's end, and I'm not quite ready to move on. I know that a lot of you are. There's no judgment here. It's just for me, I can't, you know, having, again, talked to these players, having seen the kind of weight and pressure they've been carrying over the last few months about being in the bubble, about deciding to be in the bubble, about all the questions surrounding their health and their future, and all the different social justice issues that are impacting them and weighing down on them and not being with their families for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's been, again, something that I'll never forget as far as being able to draw some kind of connection with them. And so I'm not quite ready to be at that point where I can say, yeah, package X player for X player and ship them on out. These are human beings, first and foremost, always. And I think it's a little too easy, given the success of this past season and what they were able to accomplish, to all of a sudden go, well, we didn't quite win the finals. Let's go ahead and ship Kelly Olynyk's ass to New Orleans or whatever. I just don't feel comfortable with that right away. I know this is all part of the game. Look, the trade, the ESPN trade machine is always a favorite. I've got it bookmarked somewhere. I don't know if I've used it all that frequently. And I know it's very easy to just go on there and plug player X in for player Y. We all want Donovan Mitchell or Bradley Beal or Giannis to come to this team. And I know you probably don't have realistic expectations as far as what they're able to accomplish and what these trades could generate. But, you know, that's part of the fun. You know, you follow the league for many different reasons. You connect with players. Sometimes you disconnect with them just as easily. And so I personally, again, am not quite ready to go into that point. I know I'm going to be talking about their contract situations and their impact over the course of the season. And when I talk about their future, well, a lot of that has to do with whether or not they are part of Miami's long-term vision. But I just don't think I'm ready just yet. As a society, it all feels like we're a little too quick to get to the next version of something, to forget, to rush forward. But I think this season was, quite frankly, the best in franchise history. It's all very subjective, but, you know, the three championship seasons were fantastic in their own way as well. And I think it's clear that if winning, and this is something that I used to argue with my former co-host Wes Goldberg all the time, if you prioritize winning above all else, sure, the end-all be-all is an NBA championship. If you get that, then what else compares to it? But to be on the precipice of that, to be down to the Lakers 4-2, to be able to push through everything, I think you have to give this some due consideration. I don't think the trophy should always be the defining factor regarding your enjoyment. Again, this isn't any judgment here. This is just my own personal criteria. And of course, there's never going to be any kind of mathematical equation to determine this. You know, you look at 2012, incredibly successful, following the NBA lockout after the first year of the Big Three. It was a shortened season, 66 games, and they were still able to get to a good point where they were, again, challenging an Oklahoma City Thunder team that had three future MVPs on that roster, as well as some incredible depth. You look at 2013, of course, Game 6 and Ray Allen's game-saving shot and everything else, but you look at 2006 and Dwayne Wade leading the charge on down 2-0 against the Dallas Mavericks. And those were all fantastic runs, but I just don't feel like same kind of emotional connection to them. Maybe in 2012, I think that one comes a little bit close. By 2013, it's a little bit, maybe not as deep a connection. And I think part of that has to do, if you did determine some kind of formula for weighing what measures out to be the best seasons in franchise history, a lot of that has to do with season expectations versus the achieved goals or the final end product. And that's why I think the 2003-2004 season always stands out to me. Not only was it Dwayne's rookie year, but the expectations were so much lower because Pat Riley stepped away. You had Stan Van Gundy filling in there. You had Lamar Odom, Caron Butler, who was this young core, the promising group moving forward. You had Brian Grant. You had Eddie Jones, who had been big name free agents just a couple years ago. You were kind of just recovering from the loss of Alonzo Mourning. So there was a lot going on there, and I don't think, looking back, nobody really expected that group to be able to move on from Riley that quickly and be able to contend for a playoff spot and to be able to finish the season. Look, a lot of you listening to this probably don't even remember that season. I think old heads probably remember 2003-04 as being really fun. You know, it was an interesting run for them. It was a great accomplishment to be able to just not just get in the playoffs, and then we got to see the very first glimpses of playoff Dwayne Wade. Without him, Shaquille O'Neal doesn't agree to come here. But this past season, the 2019-20 season, as long as it was, when you look at one, as I talk about with Wes, nobody saw this team being a true title contender. A top four seed in the Eastern Conference? Sure, that was a possibility. Pushing for 50, 60 wins? Probably not. I think I had them on the top end somewhere around 48 wins. And that was probably very generous just because I saw something in preseason and talking to these players and kind of understanding how it could all work together. I wound up being right, but I could have just as easily been wrong, especially given, again, the hiatus. Everything that happened to derail this season, to challenge these players on a personal level, unbelievable level of accomplishment. And they were able to do it together in a fun way, in a group way. They never turned on each other, even when there was internal issues with Justice and Dion and James Johnson and others. You never heard about any of that stuff, really. Nobody ever ripped on Dion. Nobody ever said anything about Justice, even if he did challenge for being one of the faces of the organization moving forward. So regardless of whatever those issues were, they were all kept in house in a very, very, very good way. And again, I saw chemistry, camaraderie building in a strong, strong way throughout the course of the season. And you look at all that, and for them to be able to get past the run they did, Indiana, to sweep the Pacers, to knock off the MVP The two-time MVP in Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks, who were viewed as having a historically great season despite having lost perhaps some momentum going into the Orlando bubble, and then to face a challenging Boston Celtics team with all this young wing depth and all this incredible talent and number of top three picks, et cetera, et cetera. None of that mattered because this Heat team had something different. And I maintain, and I will maintain to my dying days, that had they been healthy, they would have beat the Lakers in the finals. They absolutely would have. Goran Dragic was not the player that we had been during the first two rounds of the playoffs. He had already been suffering through a great deal of pain. And for it to tear the way it did in game one, it took all the wind out of their sails. Bam gets injured. And yes, I understand that they were already up by an astronomical amount in game one. Who cares? They came back and challenged them in game two, even without Goran and Bam. They won game three. They played them tough in game four. They won game five, etc. That, to me, really speaks volumes about how good this team was and how much they could have realistically challenged the Lakers had they been able to stay healthy. I think you look at the fact that they were able to contain Tyler Hero, that they were able to maybe impact some of the other players and keep guys from scoring, and they just relied so heavily on Jimmy Butler. Well, you know who alleviates that? A guy who can score at all three levels like Goran Dragic. Because if he's scoring the way he had been earlier in the playoffs, you don't think that would have taken some of the attention away from Tyler Hero and Duncan and others? I think they absolutely would have had to focus on a Slovenian point guard who was able to shoot almost 40-something percent from three-point range during the first couple of rounds of the playoffs. So it's, to me, the best season in franchise history. And maybe it's recency bias. Maybe I'm forgetting some of the joy that we experienced during the Big Three era and everything else. Again, subjectivity is always going to define how you see this past season in any season, of course. And memory is very difficult and tricky that way. You always are going to be looking at things a lot more fondly than you might actually have remembered them or experienced them at the time. But to me, just now that we're fresh on this, remembering everything that they went through, man, what a run. I'm going to continue talking about it too. I think it deserves it. I think it needs the kind of attention to reflect back. And I'll be talking to some other media folk from around the NBA and just reflecting back on the chaos and awesomeness of the NBA bubble, how great this Heat franchise run was to be able to go to the finals. And of course, to look ahead to what's next and plenty of time to break down players, free agency, upcoming trades and everything else. Because I feel like it's important to look at what this team did to persevere, to reach this point, and to conclude that it was nothing less than inspirational. Bam Adebayo's contract situation looms large over the offseason. I'll talk about what to expect and if the latest rumors mean anything at all. Rumors are hard to trust, but you don't have to worry about that when it comes to rockauto.com, because with an ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible to stock all the parts you might need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure pointless or intimidating questioning while the person behind the counter orders the parts you're looking for on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to cover? I know it can get a little tiresome just waiting for those parts to come in. You're kind of at their beck and call where you're not quite sure how much you're going to be paying for something. You're sitting there at home with computers with access to rockauto.com at home or in your pocket on your phone. So why not just take control, get the situation the way you want it to be? Rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you can get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Why would you spend more for the exact same parts at a chain store or even worse, at a car dealership? Believe me, those experiences are not something that you want to deal with. RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So you go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck. Then go to their How Did You Hear About Us section and enter the phrase Locked On, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Bam's contract situation, as I said before, I think is going to be the defining point of the season. Look, you can add another free agent player. You can make a trade for another player. You know that Pat Riley is going to continue to swing for the fences. I'm not so sure that's the right strategy. Again, something I'll be talking about a lot over the next couple of weeks. But to me, if you're going to stand pat, no pun intended, if you're not going to make a trade or a big move of any kind because maybe the market's dried up or maybe it's just not realistic to do so at this time or because there are so many factors, including a salary cap situation that remains very, very flexible and we're not quite sure what the final numbers are going to be, at the very least, you can control what you can control. And that partly is Bam Adebayo's contract. Now, he is up for an extension. That much we know. So is Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's an interesting wrinkle about all this, but I'm not quite ready to read anything into it. I think it was just a matter of timing. I don't think that they planned this. This is not the 2010 issue with Bam and Giannis and Victor Oladipo all becoming free agents at the same time so they could all form a big three. I know there's some video that's going on around out there regarding a potential African team of players, including Giannis and Victor and Bam, competing with any team in the NBA and being spun as a big three forming in Miami. That's all fun and games. It's also not realistic. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Look, I've long maintained that Victor wants to be here. I think there's a great connection to the area, and I think he wants to be viewed along the same lines as his mentor and a player that he's looked up to throughout his career, which is Dwayne Wade. So I could totally see that happening. I'm just not sure how it happens. And right now, he could hold the whole Indiana Pacers franchise hostage, basically, by determining what he wants to do, whether he wants to play in Indiana, whether he wants to play in Miami. It's tricky. There's a lot to take into consideration. There's nothing finalized yet. As far as Bam's contract is concerned, that is, again, a lot more obvious. He was, to me, one of the few players who I recall wanting an insurance policy arranged for by the league prior to the whole finalization of the bubble. Him, Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell, and I know there was another name out there, and I can't recall what it was, but they were players that were due for a big payday, and they wanted to ensure, because there were so many questions, whether or not they'd contract a virus, whether or not they'd potentially get hurt there. And I honestly can't recall how that was finalized. I think it's been underreported, and I don't think anything was actually done. I think the league kind of said, sorry, this is your taking your life into your hands or your health into your hands, just as you would at any other point. You can't hold the league liable, and you can't hold us responsible to ensure that you get paid if something happens to you. So it's kind of like a non-disclosure or some kind of you won't hold them liable form of some kind. You know, you enter this in agreement with the NBA, you're not going to turn around and sue them and say, well, you got me sick. You know, Bam contracted COVID, and that's it. He got past it, hopefully, at least from what we saw and what was evidenced over the course of the playoffs. And he can't hold the league liable for that because he contracted it before he entered into the Orlando bubble. So either way, as far as his contract is concerned, he wants to and deserves to get paid. So he is a max contract player. There's no debating that. I think, look, outside of Heat fandom, maybe you question his productivity and you say, this is the guy that's going to get max dollars. What's his impact? That's asinine, as we all know. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you're fully aware of what Bam's impact is, both defensively and offensively. He is the hub for both. He is the focal point. He is what makes things move easily and what can limit opponents as far as their offense is concerned because he is so great defensively, because he is so versatile and able to guard 1 through 5. We saw what this team was capable of when he was at his very best, and it was impressive as hell. So if there's anything to take away from Bam's impact in the bubble, it's that he is going to be a max player to some degree. Not even to some degree. He's going to be a max player. He deserves to be a max player, and he's going to get paid a whole heck of a lot of money. Now, the team's preference would obviously be to have him hold off and retain salary cap flexibility. Of course, they want to be able to have him not get paid right away, not sign that extension, because they can always go over the cap to pay him in the following season or whenever that might be. Who knows when that offseason might be, but they want to be able to make a move, whether it's for Giannis or somebody else. And partly the way they can retain that flexibility is by having him hold off for a year. At 23 years old, he has earned, in my opinion, the right to be a big part of the decision-making process. Not only is he an all-star in his first season, but he's a potential future all-star many times over. He is a player who is willing to do the work. He is the cornerstone of the franchise. I think while Jimmy was clearly the best player for Miami in the finals, I don't think that means that he's the best player on this team moving forward. Something that Butler hinted at many times during the course of the regular season prior to the hiatus. And I think we saw that Bam is very, very impactful in his own way, even if he's not, you know, producing as much as Jimmy did. So as far as Bam is concerned, he's a complimentary superstar in his own way. He defends, he scores, he gets to the line too, he rebounds, makes plays for others. What more could you want from a playmaking big like him that kind of redefines the position in many ways? But I also think regarding Bam's contract situation, I keep thinking about Boston's Isaiah Thomas, who wound up getting injured badly, having hip issues, back issues that really took away his productivity and made him basically a shell of who he was. And it's been a couple seasons of him trying to work his way back. And I mean, it's been tough. He's been with Denver, Washington, Cleveland for a spell. Oh, the Lakers. I forgot that. I mean, this was a player who, look, he's limited in many ways because he's shorter and not a great defender because of his size limitations. But he was one of the greatest scorers in the league for a year there. A capable scorer, a guy who could do so many things and shoot from the perimeter and get to the hoop. And, you know, he was dangerous. And, you know, again, that injury reduced a lot of that productivity. I don't know that you want to take that chance. Like, it's risky for Bam Adebayo. We saw what an injury could do to his productivity in the finals. And I mean, it's, you don't want to ever just rely on the team making good if you get hurt, because let's be honest, the team has to make a business decision. And if something should, and knock on wood, you don't want anything to ever happen to a player. If something should happen to Bam next season, well, you can bet the team would not make good and pay him a heck of a lot of money. It's just, it's unfortunate. It's the nature of the business. It's the nature of any business. You're not going to give away money to somebody who's not going to be able to recoup that or return of an investment or anything like that. So it's unfortunate, but that's also the nature of what this is. So as far as Bam is concerned, I think that if I were him, I would sign the contract extension. And while that might limit what Miami can do, you hope that they have a plan in place for both contingencies. I'm sure that they do. You know that Andy Ellisberg and everybody else in that front office has already moved forward with plans A and plans B and plans C through X. It's just, I don't know, take the money and run. That's always the nature of this. You can't ever leave things up to chance. Now, I will tell you this, my final thoughts in the whole contract situation, at least for now, if Bam doesn't sign an extension and Giannis doesn't sign an extension, well, I think you could say that there's probably very clearly something going on there. Now, from the Giannis perspective, it's also to do with the fact that he might want to see what's happening with Milwaukee for one more year. They made this great run. They fell short. They made a great run the previous season, too, and fell short. What's going to happen next season? Are they going to tweak the roster? Do they acquire another player to help complement him? Do they see some changes from Budenholzer where he's a little bit more flexible? Does he get fired? I think a lot of this has to play into it. And look, Budenholzer is a great coach in many ways. He also showed some weaknesses. I think every coach has some strengths and weaknesses in their own way. At the same time, if he starts off unsuccessfully and they let him go early in the season and bring somebody else that can guide them to a championship, I think it's pretty clear that Giannis would want to stay there. Even if he's able to stay and not get fired and still guide them to a championship, I don't see any reason why Giannis would leave Milwaukee right away. I think we're all reading a lot into these tea leaves. We're all making up whatever we want. Look, there are fan bases in Golden State, Dallas, and Toronto that all feel as strongly as all of you listening to this that Giannis will be a member of their team in the next season or two. So I wouldn't put too much stock into it right now. There's not a lot to determine. He could always force a trade. I could see why Miami would be a desirable option. I don't want to completely disillusion you of that potential, but I just also don't know that it's likely to happen. Nothing's going to happen this offseason. Let's put it that way. Aside from him perhaps signing or not signing that extension. So that's all I have to say about that. What's the plan for Miami's offseason? Well, I break it all down with Wes Goldberg in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. You know, just the other day, my wife was running late from work. She came home, wanted to spend some time playing with our son. didn't really feel like making a meal. I wasn't particularly hungry. And so what did she do? She just grabbed us a couple of Built Bars, and that was enough to keep us going for the rest of the night, because Built Bars are the best tasting protein bars that we've ever had. They're new and improved, more delicious than ever. 18 amazing flavors, 6 new ones that you probably have not tried yet, but are missing out if you don't. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, apple almond crisp. Of course, there are 12 original flavors. German chocolate, peanut butter, banana bread, salted caramel, and so many more. They're 100% covered in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. And like I said before, they've got all the nutrients that we need. They're healthy. They're great for the health conscious people. If you're looking to lose weight or even maintain it, and you want to indulge in a delicious treat or just, again, tide you over in between meals, protein bars like Built Bars are the way to go. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for all sorts of diets. They've got all the protein, calories, carbs that you're looking for. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order if you use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat, or you can always send me a direct message if that's easier for you. I'd love to get your questions throughout the offseason. I've gotten a few good ones already, even following the loss in the NBA Finals, so thank you so much for sending those in. But here is my conversation with Wes Goldberg. It's part two. If you have not heard part one, please make sure you go back and check that out. This is about Duncan Robinson and, of course, Miami's offseason plans. What's the next step for this team building off their NBA Finals run?
He's a great fit. How he impacts the game from a spacing perspective, you can't argue, right? I mean, you still had Lakers running around the arc following Duncan Robinson where he went. And he's not just a standstill three-point shooter. This is a guy who thrives coming off the screens, coming off of dribble handoffs, shooting on the move. It is such an important and underrated skill. Like, it's not – when you look at three-point shooting, you just see this raw percentage, right? But with Duncan Robinson, so many of these shots come on the move, and it's so hard to defend that. Like, this is not Robert Covington that we're talking about, who can shoot, who can hit, you know, 40% of his threes from the corner from a standstill spot with either, you know, Ben Simmons or James Harden driving and kicking to him. This is Duncan Robinson, who is very much creating his own shot. Even if he's not doing it with the ball in his hands, he works in much the way that Steph Curry does, running around the arc, running around screens, just constantly on the move in order to create some airspace, and he's willing to shoot from anywhere on the floor. That's so hugely valuable in today's game and so hard to defend for opponents. He is very much, I think, a part of Miami's future. And it's not only because of the three-point shooting, but let's remember, the Heat were attracted to Duncan Robinson. We've heard a lot about his origin story throughout these playoffs, but they were attracted to Duncan Robinson.
Did you know he was a Division III college player?
I had heard that, actually. did he average 9.5 points per game as a senior at Michigan?
He might have.
The other thing that attracted to them was his size at 6'7" and his ability, I think, to add more weight to that frame. There is potential in there for him to be a better defender than he is. And if he can become a better defender than he is, then I think his
I think he's a lot better than people kind of make it out to be. I mean, not to cut you off here, but
no, he gets like when he's at the point of attack, he can get annihilated. Like, there are times in the playoffs where guys were just going at him. Like, I remember a few series against Kemba Walker where he just had no chance and wasn't really putting up much of a fight. But I think as a team defender and as a zone defender, he is better, right? Because of that size, he's able to use the wingspan and all that stuff. And he's got good feel. But as a point of attack defender, he needs to get better. He needs to get, you know, more quick on his feet and more stout actually at the point of attack. But I think he can do that. I really do. Because he's not a bad athlete and he's so long and big. Like, I think there's potential there. Maybe not to be Klay Thompson level, but he could play a very similar role, I think, for Miami.
That's a good point. I know that comparison has been trotted out there. It's probably an unfair one, but do you see him ever being able to reach a Klay Thompson-esque level? I think the big gap is obviously the defensive one, right?
The defensive gap is there. Klay at his peak was able to take on that lead ball handler and you know, save Steph from that sort of responsibility. Right. But similar to Duncan Robinson, I mean, he doesn't really need to dribble to score. He can score points in bunches the same way
Duncan
Robinson can.
How old is Klay?
31.
Okay.
I think. But we're also talking about, like, is Duncan Robinson is an elite three-point shooter, but Klay Thompson is an all-time great three-point shooter. I mean, if Steph's the best three-point shooter ever, you can make the case that Klay Thompson is the second best, you know, with Ray Allen and Reggie Miller all being part of that conversation. But
sure.
Well, we're like, as great as Duncan Robinson is right now, there is still a gap, even from a three-point shooting perspective, between him and Klay Thompson. That's pretty sizable, I think, as far as just consistency is concerned. That I'm not saying that, and I think what you're getting at is where Duncan Robinson is in his age and his developmental curve versus where Klay is where Klay is and has been. Right. You know, maybe Duncan Robinson can get to that point, but you can't really count on a player getting to an all-time great three-point shooting point either. Is he more, you know, Joe Harris that 1 year in Brooklyn, or is he more Klay Thompson for the balance of his career? I think is an open-ended question.
I think it's more the latter. I mean, not to discredit what Joe Harris has done or is, because I mean, even he is apparently on Miami's radar as a potential free agent, but I just, knowing the evolution and the way that he's put in the work, and obviously that's been talked about a lot, but I think there is the commitment there on his end to continue to improve. I think it's still just a matter of finding a comfort level and confidence that tends to dissipate at times. And I think, like, you start to see it in game five, like when he's shooting well, he's coming off screens and he realizes, hell yeah, I am 6'7". I can shoot over Alex Caruso. I can shoot over Danny Green. It's not that difficult. And even take Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to task. You know, a guy like KCP, who was known mostly as a defender earlier in his career, you know, and showed that he could be a pretty solid one at that during the playoffs. But Duncan could get that shot over any of them. And I think it's just a matter of him, like, really feeling comfortable. It's kind of weird. And maybe you can speak to it more by, you know, covering guys like Curry and Thompson, who are such elite shooters, and maybe that confidence never dissipates for them, but that seems like it's a huge gap for Duncan. Like, there's moments there where you can see him get into his head, where he's talking to himself on the floor, maybe he'll, you know, continue to shoot his way through it, but it never really feels sincere. Like, it's just like, oh, I've got to do something, I got to try. But the fact that it, you know, teammates and Spoelstra and everybody has to yell at him, shoot the effing ball, it just right. Kind of, to me, it just stands out that maybe he just doesn't feel that confidence yet. And, you know, we've talked about Ramona Shelburne's piece, the imposter syndrome and everything else that entails. It's got to be difficult for him because of his journey. Maybe he just does not feel like he's deserving. He's not the son of an NBA player. He didn't grow up with the same kind of confidence built in and understanding what it takes inherently. You know, he was doing the work.
But I think he could develop that too. I mean, honestly, to ask him to have that given his journey and everything is almost too much to ask. And I appreciate Miami nudging him in that direction. It's the only way for him to develop that sort of confidence. But for him to even have done what he was able to do, even in that one game in the finals, I thought was pretty remarkable. I think the confidence is something that will get there. Like, the longer he is in the NBA, the more that imposter syndrome is going to go away. I think that's just a natural part of, you know, his development.
So one quick question before we wrap this up. What's next? What would you like to see done next? I'm sure it's something that we'll address many times over the course of the offseason, forever, however long it lasts. But what's the next step for this Miami team, at least as far as what you would want them to do?
I'm just looking at the immediate. Like, we know that they're going to have the cap space in 2021, right? And I don't want to get into who they're going to acquire with that. But just maintaining that flexibility is going to be important and should be. Just bring back this group. Just bring them all back. Re-sign Goran Dragic to like a one-year deal worth $20 million, whatever you need to do to keep him, right? Because you're going to have his bird rights. You can go over the cap to do it. But if you could sign him to just like this huge deal right away, then, you know, you're going to maybe beat out some longer lucrative offers that teams like, I don't know, the Knicks or the Raptors or other teams could offer him. And then bring back Jay Crowder. They have his bird rights too. That's hugely important. They're going to have the mid-level exception. Use that on a backup center for, you know, when Bam Adebayo is playing the five. And then go out, maybe on the minimum, get another wing that you could, you know, basically, if Derrick Jones Jr. isn't there, you know, maybe he moves on to another team. Solomon Hill will probably move on. I think Andre Iguodala being there is helpful, but he's old and you don't really count on him for the regular season. So I think they need like one more regular season wing basically to back up Jay Crowder if he's going to be your starting four next year. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's pretty simple. It's not going to be an exciting offseason, but really what we've seen is that next year's success is going to be based on Jimmy Butler prolonging his prime, which I think he will based on how much he works. Bam Adebayo continuing to get better, which we have no reason to believe he won't. And then Tyler Herro and Duncan Robinson continuing to develop.
That's a great point. A lot riding on this offseason, strangely enough, considering how deep their run was in the finals. But it's going to be interesting to see where Miami sees themselves as a front office, as an organization, and what their future might be. A lot of different questions, but I'm sure we'll talk again at some point during the offseason. Thanks so much for taking the time, Wes. As always, make sure you follow all of his great work over at Locked On Warriors or at Locked On NBA, where he and I talk every Tuesday. And, of course, writing for the Bay Area News Group, where he covers the Warriors as well as anybody. I'm David Ramil. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you.